Welcome back. It's Andy Parks and Fred Grandy together on WTNC.
Well, not that way.
No, not in that fashion, no, of course.
Not.
That's right. Someone said
2.5 minutes.
So you're doing the show with your partner.
Yeah. Remember when partner meant sidekick?
Yeah. Yes.
Now it's a legal obligation. You can get health benefits.
I know. All right. Joining us as a referee in all of this mess is Emily Miller, Washington Times senior editor for the opinion pages. Hello, Emily.
Hello, Emily.
Hey, you two are having way too much fun there.
Yeah, well, it's the booze. It's
Wish you'd share some with me.
Yeah, really?
You know, the guy who's got a jug and doesn't pass it around, to me, he's not much of a friend.
All right. Boy, I don't know where to start with you this week because I saw your piece on Grover Norquist and saw your most recent column on Harry Reid going nuclear. Let's begin there because this is something that, you know, we were sort of afraid of, and it looks like he's gonna get out the big weapon come January.
Yeah, I mean, Harry Reid's going nuclear, as we said. He wants to exercise this thing, which is called the nuclear option,
mm-hmm.
which means he would change the Senate rules with 51 votes, meaning a simple majority. And in all of history, it's been a two-thirds vote, which is 67 people, because the concept is the Senate should be the older deliberative body and not just changing its rules on the whim of each majority that flies through it. So Harry Reid wants to throw all that history out the window so that he can put through some new rules to make his life obviously easier to jam through things that don't have bipartisan support.
But he's not the first guy to really try this, right, Emily? I mean, I remember when the Republicans were controlling the Senate, and I'm not so sure, but I think Frist was the majority leader at the time. Wasn't there some serious talk?
Bill Frist, yeah.
About the nuclear option possibly being in a Republican initiative? Because at that point, the Democrats were filibustering much the same way the Republicans are.
That's true, and it's true, and it goes both ways. But the issue is they never did it. And Harry Reid has been on the floor of the Senate saying he's doing it. So this is as close as it's ever happened. And it sort of, I have to say, it looks like it's going to happen. I mean, he's going to just break, as Senator McConnell has said day after day on the floor this week, Harry Reid is going to break the rules in order to reform the rules and change the rules. And then once he's done that, once he's exercised the nuclear option, what he wants to do is change the way the Senate works in order to basically shut down the minority voices. Of course, this is all very short-sighted because one day the Democrats will be in the minority again. I mean, it is inevitable. But, you know, he's not thinking like that. He's thinking short-term. He's thinking he wants to force Republicans, not give them an opportunity to filibuster this thing called the procedure.
Sure.
Motion to proceed, which is a way that the Republicans use that now in order to get amendments on the bill.
Right.
So by filibustering it slows the process down so that they can possibly have an amendment, because what Reid has done in the past 2 years is progressively added more and more amendments, called filling the amendment tree,
mm-hmm.
so that nobody in the minority can have an amendment. So the bill comes through, it's the majority bill, it does not get any bipartisan support, it doesn't get not any changes, and gets shoved right through.
I was just going to ask, at this point, though, have we already really had too much inside baseball? Can he get away with this because most people don't understand, and those that do perhaps understand don't care? This seems like an inside the beltway gambit by him, and I'm not so sure he hasn't said, the timing's on my side. If I'm ever going to do this, now's the time to do it. And from a strategic point of view, he's probably right.
Yeah, and what you got to lose? He's
right.
Giving it up at the end of the term anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's two points. One is that the older Democratic members who really believe in the institution aren't all on board on this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to get 51 votes is not a given because, you know, the people, a lot of the senators, not all, a lot of the senators believe more in the institution than Harry Reid does, and keeping the institution as it was intended by the founding fathers to not be like the House. You know, the House is majority rule. Minorities, they don't do anything. The Democrats aren't doing anything. All they do is vote.
Yeah.
They can't get any bills passed. They can't get any amendments on. That's how it works. That's how it's always worked. The Senate's supposed to be different.
But who are these guys, these old Democrats? I mean, are you talking about guys like Jay Rockefeller? Tom Harkin's got to be in his 70s. I mean, some of these guys are older than our national forests.
All right?
I mean, so I'm just wondering who this group is and whether or not he can't work without them.
Well, there is. It's not. No one's talking publicly because this is such an internal thing. And, you know, if they were not going to vote for it, they would tell him privately and he wouldn't be announcing it. But I'll tell you, as far as what you were saying about the inside baseball, I agree. I've written for years about, 2 years ago, Reed tried to do this once before. Mm-hmm. And I wrote about that. I've always been interested in it. And so I wrote about it today, and I'm not really thinking there'd be much interest in it because, like you said, it is inside Beltway. Well, to my surprise, it's been the number one story on our website almost all day. It is because Americans really get it. Even though it is to us in Washington, it seems procedural and nobody will understand it, they really understand it, and they understand it because it feels like tyranny.
Yeah, I was
going to
say
like
that.
Like their voices aren't going to hurt. And in the Senate, when you're in those sparsely populated states, your senator means so much more because he has so much more power.
Sure.
So when you're just going to disenfranchise all those Republicans, all the people who live in the states who are represented by Republicans, people do get it.
How much of this is saving face for Harry Reid? Because he's the guy who has claimed this has been a do-nothing Congress, and now this is his only means of getting something done. Is that his thinking?
That's his thinking. I mean, that's he said this is the way to make the Senate more more efficient, and as you know, the Washington Times has done all this research and shown that he's overseen the least effective and a productive Senate for the past 2 years in history. And so, but the thing is that, you know, all these things, the rules that he wants to change, mm-hmm. can all be done already without changing the rules, without using the nuclear option. The Republicans can filibuster less of the procedures, motions to proceed, as long as Harry Reid starts letting them have some amendments.
But,
and that would all be resolved.
But the problem with that, and I'm sure you know this as well as we do, because you cover the Hill, If you don't use the nuclear option, you give up one of the most tantalizing aspects of this, which is the complete humiliation of the Republican
yeah.
Party. And if Barack Obama, as we were talking about earlier, is out to destroy the Republican Party, this is not a bad way to do it. I do have to say, though, that there is a certain cyclical nature to this. I think it was back in the Taft era, which we were talking about earlier, when Republicans ran the table in the House. The Speaker was a real authoritarian guy named Joe Cannon, who said, the purpose of the minority is to make a quorum. The right of a minority is to draw a paycheck. It sounds to me like we're coming back around to that.
Yeah.
But here's the lesson. Cannon was swept out of power. Even back then, without the wraparound social media we have right now, eventually, people said, no, you cannot run this country as if it were a third world dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And you know, this may be the downside of what he's trying to do.
All right. I want to take you to one of your other pieces this week, and that was the Rest in Peace, Grover Norquist. Lindsey Graham, Saxby Chambliss, Peter King, Bob Corker. We've got some wavering out there. But you don't think that Grover's going away, do you?
Absolutely not. I mean, you know, I spoke with him Monday, the day where, you know, everyone in the liberal media was saying, ding dong, you know, Grover Norquist is dead, it's over, we're getting tax hikes, it's inevitable. And, you know, he was like, this is ridiculous. You know, this is not true at all. First of all, you know, one thing that always is getting eliminated when you read these mainstream media reports is they all say, okay, Lindsey Graham says, I'm willing to break the pledge. But they cut out, I mean, literally on video, they cut out the second part of the sentence, which says, if we can get serious entitlement reform.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of these Republicans, not one of them, first of all, none of them are for higher rates. None of them. All they've all said, which is the breaking of the pledge, is they would support cutting deductions and loopholes without raising rates, without lowering rates. So it wouldn't be revenue neutral. So there would be more money in the government. But that would have to be to really, they all said that. The reason they would do that is in exchange for serious entitlement reform. So the spending side gets changed, which is loathed the Democrats to do. And Obama has refused to do anything about entitlements, which is the real problem here, which is the reason why we're in debt, which is the reason why we have these crises. So, you know, and as Grover said to me, it's like they're all saying, sure, by saying I would break the pledge, they're saying, if I get this, they're all saying, if I get the silver unicorn. And the issue is, there are no silver unicorns. So they're not going to, most likely, you're not going to get Medicare reform from this president and the Democrats in the Senate. But you are going to get, you know, this tax reform. And if you can get the tax reform and no lower rates, that's what you should be going for. But, you know, I think rumors of Grover's demise are way exaggerated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Fred, you're of the thinking that this ought to be something that's renewable every couple of years.
Well, yeah, I was making the point. The whole thing about the no-tax pledge, and I probably signed it a time or two and broke it a time or two, is its permanence. It is more permanent than your constitutional oath to protect enemies, this country from enemies foreign and domestic. And I'm just saying, look, if this is a good idea and transcends all variations on time and space and the economy, then make it only last as long as each session of Congress and let members recommit. And to me, the Republicans could do this in a heartbeat if they changed the rules that just said no oath or pledge or contract will extend beyond the last day of the present congressional session.
Well, just to be clear, the Grover's Pledge isn't from the House. It's written by Grover Organization, Americans for Tax Reform, and it's written to the constituents. The member, which is you, did signed it to the people of my district or my state. I will not raise taxes. I will not do this. It's not, so they can back out of it at any time. All they have to do is tell their constituents, I'm not adhering to this pledge that I signed for you.
Mm-hmm. And then they have to pay the price with their constituents. Who,
yeah. Well, yeah, but right. You see, that's the problem. That's where the extortion angle.
Wait a minute.
That's the point, is to keep them strong.
Hey, Emily, you ever notice that the former congressmen think that it's extortion when the American public wants something?
I know,
sure. Blame it on me now.
All congressmen are against earmarks, except for when it's appropriations for their district.
Yeah, Fred, how much did you help out the pork producers and the corn growers
Look,
in Iowa?
Let me just put it this way, and Emily, you know this probably better than I do. All members of Congress, regardless of what side of the aisle they're on, hate pork but love bacon. I will leave it at that, okay? And that has not changed, I think, since the first Congress sat.
Uh-huh.
And it probably won't change,
right?
Regardless
will.
Of what happens to Grover Nordquist.
All right, Emily, we got to run. We'll do it again next week. Thank you so much.
That's fun.
Bye, Emily.
Take care. Emily Miller, Washington Times senior editor for the opinion pages. 427, it's Andy Parks and Fred Grandy here on 730 AM and 102.9 FM, WTNT.